Abdur El Hamad versus Commercial Board of Adjustment. Mr. Leonard?
May it please the court. I am Walter Leonard. I represent Mr. Abdur El Hamad, who is the appellant in this matter. This is actually a fairly interesting case in what is typically a dry subject. It is a zoning case, which have, in many cases, fairly specialized and specific rules. This one may be even more specialized and specific than many. What we have here is not the typical, which is usually a variance that comes before these courts, but a special exception. A special exception differs considerably under the code from a variance in that the legislative body, the city council, has already determined that in Zone A, certain other uses are perfectly acceptable, presuming that the Board of Adjustment reviews them and finds them to be compatible with surrounding uses. In this particular case, we have to review what the board did in terms of implementing the standards in a special exception case. Here, the facts are somewhat interesting. This was a request for a renewal of an extension on the term for a special exception. This particular use was found acceptable by the city council and found acceptable numerous other times by the board was in this case found not to be and was denied. This use is in with an area in which there are many similar uses which have been granted similar things or for which there are many areas that are zoned as of right. It is basically a heavy industrial type area. Part of what happened here, I believe, is that a great deal of political pressure was brought to bear, raising issues and problems which really pushed the whole situation out of the normal zone. There were people from the area, developers, neighborhood associations that wished this area to change. And for that purpose, this previously acceptable, compatible area, I believe the record will show, was found to not be. We must remember that this is not a legislative body. This is a quasi-judicial body, board. And that we have a situation in which the courts must take a somewhat closer review rather than that, the actions of the city council. We believe that the standard which must be used here basically is one of abuse or arbitrary and capriciousness, which in this particular case I think are essentially the same. The standard review of these bodies must be stricter than that of a variance, because in a variance, state law as well as city ordinance makes it very clear that variances are discouraged, that they are not proper, that they are only in special or exigent circumstances. Here, we have said that they are all right if you find certain areas of compatibility, and it is just compatibility, not extraordinary, unique, necessary to prevent injustice, etc. It is simply compatibility, a finding which in this case was found several times previously. The standards
eight months before the hearing that we're here about, your client was told that he had 6 months to close his business. So 6 months before, they granted him one, but only on the condition that he close his business. Kind of seems like to me that that's the hearing that you needed to complain about, as opposed to letting the 6 months go by, not close the business, and 8 months later, then ask for 2 more years after you're supposed to have closed the business 2 months earlier.
They were not in a position to impose that condition.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying it seems to me that's the hearing. If your position is they couldn't say you have 6 months to close your business, that's the hearing that needed to be appealed from, not later on.
Conceivably, Your Honor, if that was improper and they had no authority to do so, then he certainly was free to come and say later, I'd like to have this reconsidered. Because if they made an illegal act, it's probably not real. Their standards should not be anything that could have prevented him from getting it this time. So if they tried to impose earlier an improper standard, that's kind of beside the point. They did something illegal before. Trying to impose that later is no less illegal. And I think that the standards here make it, that was also, I suspect, possibly influenced by the same improper things that we're complaining about here. So we're essentially saying the same problem existed and that they were simply retreading it.
You don't think there's a waiver or something? You know, if a trial court makes a mistake, you have to bring it to their attention. Or?
If it's illegal per se, I'm not sure you have to. If you come back and ask for it again. And he had the opportunity to ask for it again.
So is your overall position in this that this was an illegal act by the board?
Under the circumstances, yes. Under terms of what the law is and what the standards of review, yes, I think they illegally denied this extension.
What is the solution to changing circumstances in the neighborhood?
The solution would be, one, that the city council makes clear what the standards are. The city council has to make this decision to change zoning. State law is absolutely crystal clear and always has been. State zoning can be done only in one way. Home rule, general law, whatever, you must do it in one way. Saying we want things to be this particular way doesn't work. If they wanted to change it, they changed the zoning. Simple as that. You may create then a problem of amortization or nonconforming uses, but you change the zoning. To try to do it through this back doorway of allowing people who have no specific role in the zoning process to exert exotic influence, shall we say, is an abrogation of the law. And we must follow the zoning law that is specified quite clearly in 211 of the local government code. Thank you for making my argument. I'll be getting to that in a minute. They have basically stepped outside and done this as a backwards way of rezoning. And they've done that, and that's the problem, at least in part. Now, over the years, we've reviewed these cases very much within a narrow zone of variances, partly because of the brilliant arguments of my learned colleague. It's not. Variances should be an entirely different situation. Here, this has been many times found to be compatible, not just the last time, but the times before. Nothing has substantially changed except that people want it to change now, outside the normal system.
Seems to me that these holdings, or whatever you want to call it, the outcome of these hearings, there was a pattern that he knew that he was going to have to close his business. He would go in and ask for 2 years, he'd get 1 year. He'd go in and ask for 2 years, he'd get 6 months and be told to close his business. It isn't like he's blindsided all of a sudden where he's this consistent pattern of, oh, sure, go ahead, you can have 2 more years, and then suddenly, oh, no, we're not approving this.
The problem here is that until they actually said no, it was very arguable as to whether he had a good right to bring it up, as to whether he had exhausted his administrative remedies.
How about when they told him, you have 6 months to close your business in unequivocal terms in January?
They still gave him the time, and he still had
to close his business.
He still had the opportunity to come back, though, and ask for the special exception. Okay. And they didn't, so they did not close it off. It was still, we want you to do it. But that doesn't mean that they made him do it. I suppose he could have waited and then be pushed out, but then they could have argued that he waived his right to ask for a special exception. He was in a catch-22 of sorts. I think he took the actions he had to take to properly bring this before a court with a final result. Even in a home rule situation, the board must not act outside the compatibility standards, which the law says, which is the only thing that they must consider. They'd already found this. They have no particular findings of change or that the area is any more non-compatible than it was previously. I think the courts both the trial and this court
well,
must
now, review. I thought, if we're talking about compatibility, I thought the record was replete with change of compatibility as far as the surrounding areas and what was happening to them vis-a-vis what the way it used to be.
Right, but those are things that the city council has not specified. It is areas near this that have changed that now want this area to be undone, to have it change. Basically, the zoning of the use has changed, when the proper way to do that is to change the zoning. They're coming in trying to not argue which is the proper thing in a particular case like this. Is this compatible? Is it not? What are the problems? They're arguing, we want all this gone. They're coming in asking the board to do a rezoning of this basic area, to make a policy decision that we're getting rid of all these. And that's improper. And all those arguments that are asking them to do that are improper. That is rezoning. That belongs to the city council. The city council abdicates their responsibility or does not choose to implement their responsibility, then somebody needs to go to them and say, this area needs to change.
Well, maybe Mr. Hamad needed to go to the city council and to get his business in an area that was zoned specifically for what he was doing and not have to go and get a special exception every 2 years, which in and of itself shows that there's some uncertainty. Something supplication that's after being done in order to get permission to continue to do this.
But in the Byzantine world of zoning, that then constitutes what it would likely be considered to be spot zoning, and you can't do that. So we are stuck with that situation. If the city council wants this area to change, they know how to do it. The law says how to do it. They shouldn't just palm it off on a quasi-judicial body. It's a legislative decision, and they need to make that. And there are ways of dealing with the problems that may generate. Plenty of ways. City of Fort Worth, for example, amortizes signs to the best extent it can, and some other such uses. Many cities in the area amortize such uses. But that's under a different and much more strict requirement for meeting established capital requirements and needs. And there are constitutional protections for that. The city council has set the procedures. They have been found previously all right. Nothing has particularly changed other than the people want it to change. They are trying to rezone this area. People in the area are trying to rezone it, but they're trying to do it like this, on a case-by-case basis, where the issue is this compatible with what is there? Has much changed? What is wrong with it? My client offered to make changes to ensure greater compatibility. Those weren't even listened to. They're trying to rezone. This board is trying to rezone in response to political pressure. It's not based on the compatibility of this particular circumstance or this particular business, which was offered, changes were made. This is contrary to many of these situations in compliance. But they want to change all of this area.
Okay, you've been throwing out the word compatible several times. Compatible with what?
Compatible with that particular area, which is an industrial area.
So if it can be compatible at one time and later on it's not compatible in another, are we then not talking about that compatibility?
Conceivably you could be, but that has to be an action of the city council. If the city council created this district, it created those statements. The board has always considered these things to be the same. There is no finding of any change, other than that people wanted the area to change. There are many...
And it was changing.
It was changing under the provisions of the city council's zoning of those other areas, but not this one.
Okay. Let me ask you what you just started off with on your discussion. Do you agree or disagree with this? The court can reverse the trial court's decision to grant the board a summary judgment only if this court finds that the board abused its discretion by acting so arbitrarily or capriciously as to amount to a clear and prejudicial error of law or acting without regard to any guidelines and principles. Do you agree with that's our standard or not?
I think that's probably the furthest statement of that particular standard that's possible. I think that in this particular case, because of these circumstances, that it falls within that standard. I think that here, where they have clearly reversed themselves, where they are clearly acting outside their legal authority, that that has meant that they are outside any such thing.
No, I was just asking if you agree that's the standard that we're, the standard review.
I think that is an extreme statement of that particular standard.
All right. What standard do you think is appropriate?
I think that it has to be viewed on a case-by-case basis, whether it meets the law, whether they have judicially recognizable standards, because this is a quasi-judicial body. That presuggests almost that we should follow it with the deference you give to a legislative body, which would be more like a variance-type situation. This has already been determined that this should be possible, and they are allowing that in this particular case, if, as long as you can show the compatibility, which we then may review, because I think we have to.
Thank you, Mr. Leonard.
Thank you.
Mr. Gorski.
Justice Casey, and may it please the court. Justice McCoy, let me go back to a couple of things you started to talk to Mr. Leonard about. First of all, the issue of whether there was an illegal decision at the second hearing, which was in January of 2007, I would direct your attention to our Exhibit 9 attached to our brief. Rule 5.141 of the zoning ordinance in Section A3 states that each subsequent extension, a period not to exceed 2 years. So they could have given him 5 minutes. They gave him 6 months. Now, the interesting thing about the 6 months is, if you look at our brief, I conclude a paragraph. In short, he was arguing for an extension after telling the board just 6 months earlier that he didn't need any time to shut his business. If you read the record of the second hearing, which is in the court's, in the board's return, Mr. Ahmad came in and said, I need 6 months. His quote was, to close up my business and hyphen everything else. Somewhere between that statement and the September 07 hearing, the one that's at issue here, he had a change of heart. Now, what's going on here is that we regulate motor vehicle junkyards by special exceptions. That means in order to have a motor vehicle junkyard, you have to get a special exception in that area of zoning. Mr. Leonard, I think, is confusing us all by talking about a change in zoning. There was no rezoning here. It was a special exception that was denied. And you're right. You don't get those possibly forever. You get them for a certain amount of time. The first time, you get them for not to exceed 5 years. The second time, 3 years. And the any time after that, not to exceed 2 years. At the start of the hearing on the motion for summary judgment, there was some confusion about the fact that Mr. Leonard was saying, well, you know, right down the road, they gave this guy 10 years, and they're really being arbitrary and capricious here. Well, actually, if you look, the district they were in, they only get 5 years. Another zoning district, again, another zoning district, allows
the 5, the 3, the 2.
Yes.
It's in 5.141.
A and A.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But if you will look down
K,
there you have 10 years. So those are the zoning districts. That's not what's going on here. What's going on here is what you were talking about, that there was a change in compatibility. And that are the magic words that are needed for the Board of Adjustment under its other rule, 3.303, which can be found under
3.303.3?
Yes, sir, under tab 8 at the bottom of the page. And it says the exception will be wholly compatible with the existing use and permitted development of adjacent properties, blah, 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 as the board finds necessary to protect and maintain the stability of adjacent neighborhoods. Now, if you look at the record, I had a record site, yes, clerk's record at 410, there's a nice little drawing that shows that Mr. Ahmad's property abuts single family. Now, in the Southwest Paper Stock case,
well, I can't look at that and see that.
If you look at the bottom left, there's an A.
Yes.
That means A, single family. And that's residential. Also, Bob West at the hearing indicated that he was going to vote against this because he was finding it not compatible because it was next to residential, which is a standard. Now,
well, this says A5.
That means you can build 5 units to the acre.
That's residential?
That's residential.
I see.
And the testimony is that there's residential within 200 feet. They can see within 200 feet. Now, if you look at Southwest Paper Stock, it has in footnote 2 a discussion about adjacency. And what they say is, to the extent Southwest contends that the testimony was inadmissible because the resident's property did not touch Southwest boundaries and was not in the K district, that argument is without merit. Well, here it touches it. But even if it didn't touch it, this court has said in Southwest Paper Stock in 1998 that it doesn't have to touch. Adjacent is enough. With that discussion, I hope that answers your question and shows there were some preconceived assumptions that were not correct. What is going on in this case, like every case before an appellate court, is you've got to fit it into the existing body of law that goes before, and you try to write the least expansive brief for what's going to come after. As Harry Truman said, we never know what the future holds for us. Well, appellate judges sure don't, so they don't want to go too far out there. We've got a simple argument for you. You need to look at pick and pull, which was a special exception junkyard case, and you need to look at Southwest Paper Stock, both opinions out of this court. And they tell you what the standard is. The standard is an abuse of discretion standard, and you can do it through summary judgment. Now, y'all probably want to know why I didn't ask him to come up with a summary judgment. Why didn't he show us how we abused our discretion? I go back and forth on that all the time, and where I leave it is I'm the guy that's going to come up with the big record, which we produced, which was, 175 pages. And so it's perfect for a summary judgment case because there are no material fact issues. You've got people testifying both ways, and they can have different judgments, but there are no material fact issues for the most part, and that's one of the standards under 166B. What he's really asking you to do is commit reversible error because you're going to have to put yourself in the position of the board to come up with a decision different than the board came up with. And as you know, on those kind of instances, you have to defer to them as long as there's some evidence in the record that's substantive and probative. Now, to get that analysis started, there's two questions. One, was there sufficient information for them to even start down the track of exercising their discretion? And number two, did they err in their application? Well, I didn't cite this in our brief, but it's pretty Hornbook law. Kindred versus Conkim tells you what's more than a scintilla of evidence, which gets you to the level that they can make their decision on, or evidence that they can make their decision on, and that is it's got to be more than surmise or suspicion. And it's, put in layman's terms, it's got to be enough evidence there where reasonable minds can debate back and forth and come up with a decision. Was it sufficient to start down the road of exercising their discretion? Well, there were 102 items in the return, the board's return, that shows you what they look at. There were 175 pages in an administrative file. I'm not saying look at just because it looks like we killed a couple of trees, we win. But if you look in there, you can see there's a lot going on. They've got the zoning down. They've got a report from staff. They've got people have signed up to talk. They had 3 hearings on this, and the neighbors came out because they had a message, which was the neighborhood was in transition. One of the things Mr. Leonard failed to point out is that we had an exhibit attached, and it's in the summary judgment hearing, which is the Southeast Sector Future Land Use Plan. And with people learning that gasoline at $4 a gallon means you don't live in Saginaw to work in Fort Worth, you try to get closer to Fort Worth, we're seeing some areas become revitalized, and this is one of those. And the corridor that this business is on is South Riverside Drive. And under the Southeast Sector Plan, this now does rise the level of city council because they came up with this. They say we want to stimulate the redevelopment of the Riverside Drive commercial districts. What you have in zoning is, and you can see this anywhere you drive around the city, you do not have a Home Depot somewhere unless there are a lot of rooftops close by. You don't have commercial until you have rooftops. What's going on in this area, you're starting to see rooftops come in. The commercial will come next. And the homeowners are saying, this is supposed to be a commercial area. It can be a commercial area, and we don't mean junkyards by that. That's industrial. We mean commercial.
Well, how do you address his argument that basically if this area needs to be rezoned for this development, it's to be done by the city council?
It doesn't have to be rezoned. That's the flaw in the argument.
Okay.
You can put single-family homes on industrial-zoned land. You can put commercial on industrial-zoned land. The council could come in later if they wanted, and, yes, they could do that, but that doesn't drive this decision. That's a red herring. What the council can do is delegate to the board the ability to grant special exceptions in any zoning category, anywhere. A variance is something that is in the zoning district, like you want to go over the line with your garage, the setback line. That's illegal. You can get a variance from that. It is not illegal to have a junkyard in a one-family, in a commercial area if the Zoning Board of Adjustments finds it's compatible under 303.3 with surrounding areas. So that's the answer to his question. The abuse of discretion standard, we all know, started with Downer versus Aquamarine Operators. You've got to follow the guiding rules and principles. We've been talking about the guiding rules and principles, 5141 and 3303. It's got to be arbitrary and capricious. They weren't arbitrary and capricious. The junkyard or area shall not adjoin residential districts. That's a pretty clear statement in 5141B1. Member West talked to him about that and said, I'm not going to vote for this because of that reason. What was interesting at the hearing, Steve Swander, representing Mr. El Hamad, was very candid and said, yes, we know there are houses down there. Well, you know, there you've got independent confirmation from Mr. El Hamad's attorney that the neighborhood is changing.
So is it 3.303 that is the criteria used by the Board of Adjustment that we need to look at to see if their actions were arbitrary and capricious?
You need
when
to look
looking at these criteria?
Yeah, you need to look at two. That you need to look at three things. 5.14B1 that says it can't adjoin, and look at how that's been defined by Southwest Paper Stock. Look at 3.303.3 that says the board finds necessary to protect and maintain the stability of adjacent properties. And that's where that battle was being fought. These people were saying the properties are not going to retain their value. They're not going to remain stable if we can't have a commercial corridor here like the third item, which is the Southeast Sector Plan, which says we want this to be a commercial corridor. You touched on it, Justice McCoy, when you said, well, what about this thing and change? It doesn't happen overnight, is what you were saying. It comes gradually. That's what's going on in this case.
Counselor, is there any authority out there that says anything to the effect that assuming a party meets, presents evidence that might fit these standards that we're talking about, that they are entitled to a special exception as a matter of right,
sure,
or as a matter of
sure.
law?
Sure, sure. Well, the body of law always comes up the other way, unfortunately.
Well, that's what I, yeah. That gets kind of points up the question I had in my mind. It seems to me that the way the ordinances are worded, that the special exception is something that the board may do. There's nothing that says it shall do it under any circumstances, which
That's interesting. The way you can answer that in a backhanded way is they shall do it as long as they find it's compatible, so on and so forth. If it were compatible.
Well, that's where I don't see anything in the wording of the ordinance that suggests that they shall do anything. It's more of a permissive
It is. Look, the system as I see it, that system and the appellate courts is to kick cases out. It's not to keep them in play for a long time. That may be cynical, it may be wrong, but that's where I'm coming from. This system is designed for you guys not to see many cases, because if it were designed any other way, you would be down here on all these cases that come before the Zoning Board of Adjustment, where people feel intently about their position and they're diametrically opposed. And then let's really confuse it all. They're probably within the band of reasonableness that we talk about in the law all the time. Just talk to two mothers that are on the opposite side of the case of should you send your children to private schools or public schools. Now, we know sending your kids to school are in the middle of reasonableness. And that's what happened in this case. Were they reasonable? Did they abuse their discretion? They followed the rules. The way the system is set up, if they have substantive and probative evidence, and we believe this record is full of it, then it's over. You can come down, you can be heard that day, but if you don't get the result you want, you're looking at a system that's trying to kick you out from that point forward. And for that reason, we believe Justice Walker was correct in granting the summary judgment. We ask you to affirm looking at Pick and Pull and Southwest Paper Stock.
Thank you, Mr. Gorski. Mr. Leonard.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to clarify or just raise a few points I'd like to have before the court. The true rules here are in the local government code. The city's ordinances, which are basically an attempt to kind of codify the existing state law, is 211, I believe, 009. And that is truly what controls what a board of adjustment, special exceptions, and so forth are. The city of Fort Worth has added quite a few glosses and added things like burdens of proof and things like that that are not in the local government code. Even home rule, they can't do that. Maybe procedural stuff, that's probably all right. But in terms of standards and other such things, they cannot change. Because this is a rezoning case. They are taking away options by saying this area is changing. This future plan that they're alluding to is not zoning. It's a plan. No more than that. It's what they'd like to have happen. But that doesn't require anyone to do anything. It doesn't change anything. The city itself has some sort of loosey-goosey system which allows in an industrial area residential stuff to be put in. That changes. By doing so, they're allowing all kinds of other things to change. People's expectations, people's rights and standards are all being changed thereby by putting houses in an industrial area. If you look at the map that you were shown, you'll see railroads, heavy commercial roads, and so forth. This is a bizarre place to put residential, yet we are automatically favoring it in an area that's probably not likely to favor it in the long run. The market probably won't. Here, the board got it wrong. We're not changing the world. The board got outside of its zone of authority. It is rezoning. It is substituting its judgment or the political pressure it was under for what it says for that particular area. This is a residential across Commercial Boulevard by the railroads. And note this compatibility standard, to preserve the stability of adjoining neighborhoods, not to enhance them, not to bring along some planner's scheme. It is to preserve the stability.
Where are you reading?
From what he was quoting, and I'm sorry, I forgot, is to preserve.
All right, you're reading from 303. Okay.
Stability of adjacent neighborhoods. Stability. Not the plan, not what we want. Stability.
Okay, it seems like to me that the bottom line is, did the board abuse its discretion in determining that you did not meet your burden of proof in proving 3.303?
Because they were at, yes, I think.
That's the bottom line right there.
I believe it is.
Okay.
I believe they did abuse their discretion because they got outside of their area of jurisdiction and asking for doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
That's the part of your argument, counsel, I just don't understand, but that's probably my problem, not yours.
I think, Your Honor, that they are basically stepping outside what they should be doing. If the city's own standard is this preserving the stability of adjacent neighborhoods, what they're doing is precisely not that. They
what,
are enhancing.
What circumstance would ever occur where they would not grant a special exception? If the business kept doing what the business had done.
If the business were doing, was doing it badly. If
badly? You mean like cars on top of fences so you can see them? I mean, what? What does badly mean?
I believe the record showed at one point that that was an incorrect statement, but that's another matter. If, say, for example, it was determined that this particular use was in itself a hazard. It's not. It's perfectly valid in many areas of this city. It's allowed. They allowed it themselves many times, so we can't say that this was wrong. This is a difficult case because there's some sort of general onus against such uses, and that we must therefore protect residential, but residential that can insinuate itself into other districts and areas where it really doesn't belong because of railroads and heavy commercial highways and so forth. That's just letting the tail wag the dog. This is a valid use. The city council has said that it is a valid use in that area and has said that it is should be allowed if it can be done to be compatible to preserve the stability of adjoining neighborhoods. Yet here we allow neighborhoods to change, which is putting it backwards. And in effect, it's almost like a taking case where they had a right before, but all of a sudden we allow it to change, and then you're out of here. Nothing wrong, nothing changed, nothing happened. That should be the standard. And it clearly falls within an abuse.
Thank you, counselors. Very grateful for your time here this morning. Case is submitted, and you're both excused.